called "We Have Not Come to Take Prisoners." We have not come here to take prisoners, but to surrender ever more deeply to freedom and joy. We have not come into this exquisite world to hold ourselves hostage from love. Run, my dear, from anything that may not strengthen your precious budding wings. Run like hell, my dear, from anyone likely to put a sharp knife into the sacred, tender vision of your beautiful heart. We have a duty to befriend those aspects of obedience that stand outside of our house and shout to our reason. Oh, please, come out and play. For we have not come here to take prisoners or to confine our wondrous spirits, but to experience ever and ever more deeply our divine courage, freedom, and light. So that's something Hafiz has to say to us tonight. We've been presenting a topic called the inner critic or the judge. And in doing it, obviously there's a fair amount of theory and intellectual knowledge, in a way, that is one of the ways we can actually lay it out, but we're not really doing it to give you a load of intellectual knowledge you can get anywhere. So I wanted to say a few things about the art of listening in a situation like this. And it is an art, actually, to really learn to listen with our whole being, not just our mind. Our mind loves information, and it's good that it does. It's where we can store a lot of it. But when we present a concept like an inner critic, there's more than just the concept, just the idea of it being and entering into the space. One of the ways of listening is to see if that concept, if you can find any relationship to the concept in your body soul. If you can feel it. If you can let in the concept into your being and feel where it lands. Whether it's the concept of an inner critic, a psychological structure, or the concept of presence. And one of the ways to listen is to listen whilst sensing our arms and legs. We're always sensing. It is, in many ways, the practice we can do all the time. And if we're sensing while we're listening, we're not just focused in our minds. There's more of us available, more of us here to be penetrated and touched and opened. And the field, we're always, when we're sensing, we're sensing the field, and when different things are presented and brought into the space, you can actually sense the field change. You can feel the field contract, you can feel it open. All of that is information for the soul. Different kind of learning not just of the mind. And part of the reason I'm saying this is that, you know, we're going to present, we're going to say a few more things tonight about the inner critic, and, you know, some more concepts will emerge. Just see whether you can understand them in your body soul. One way of looking at spiritual work is a journey returning to our natural state, the state that we left. Many ways we left it when we took a body. That's one way of seeing it. And then when we took our bodies, we still had a lot of contact with our natural state. It got informed by the physical world, and slowly, different impressions, different experiences, slowly disconnected ourselves from our natural state. Our memory of our natural state got obscured by things that were more in our face, more relevant to the stage in our development. But really, one of the ways many people talk about spiritual work is the undoing of a lot of identifications that we've taken on, a lot of beliefs, a lot of concepts and identifications that we've now taken on and are the things that we see reality through. And we're convinced of them, a deep conviction in them. And one of the things that really we come up against a lot in our work is the ways we take ourselves to be, self-images. You know, who I take myself to be. Many of them. Take myself to be a human, a separate physical body. All of these are ways I take myself to be. They're not necessarily my natural state. They're things I've taken on, clothes I've put on. And we put on these clothes, I think, from the moment we take a body and we keep putting them on, and then at a certain point we really stop putting them on, but our reality keeps confirming that they're the right clothes. And at some point we put on our last outer layer and we move into the world. Our overcoat or whatever it is. And in many ways, one way of looking at the inner critic, the superego, is the last structure that envelops our soul. It's the most sophisticated structure. It's most sophisticated because it develops when we're already got a lot of knowledge. It develops somewhere, you know, starts developing around age 4, although the fuel for it comes earlier than that, and we see it around earlier than that. And it kind of completes its development around age 7. It doesn't change much after that. Our superego is pretty much set by that time. As we talked about, it morphs, it updates itself. It's like a software program, constantly gets an update. But the fact of it is pretty much sorted out by the age 7, 8. And one of the things that really keeps the inner critic going, what creates the criticism, really, is there's embedded in it what we call an ego ideal. The way we're supposed to be, the way we were told we were supposed to be, and eventually the way we really believe we're supposed to be. We take it on. But if there was just that ideal and nothing else, there wouldn't be any criticism. There is something else. There's the way we're supposed to be, and there's the way we are. The self-image, the who we take ourselves to be. And this who we take ourselves to be is never the same as the ideal. And that's what creates the criticism. How I am isn't good enough in whatever area we're talking about. So the ego ideal is the image behind the structure of the inner critic. And it'll change depending on the situation we're in. And if we reach our ideal, if who we take ourselves to be actually reaches the ideal, we're fine, no criticism happening. But then our situation changes, and all of a sudden, who we're taking ourselves to be isn't ideal anymore. A new ideal arises. So implicit in an ego ideal is an inner image of ourself. And it's not easy to get to because our focus tends to be on how we're supposed to be. And our usual familiar self exists in relationship to this ideal. If I'm supposed to be stronger, I'm not strong enough. I should be able to be strong in certain situations. Implicit in that is that I'm not. I'm not strong enough. Or if I'm supposed to be smarter, implicit in that is I'm not smart. And the truth is, if we're told 1,000 times, or we get the impression that we're told 1,000 times that we're not smart, that's what we begin to believe. And usually the way we're told we're not smart is, you could have done better, you could have been smarter, you could have worked harder. So there's a sense, whenever we've got this ego ideal, this idea of how we should be, in relationship to it, we are deficient, we are lacking, we're not good enough. Bottom line, for the most part, the majority of our superegos, we come out not being good enough. There are some, and I think somebody mentioned one the other day, which flips the other way around. And they come out looking good because their criticism goes out towards the rest of the world. It's a different way of shoring up and keeping in place a particular self-image. So the superego's job, it's the glue, if you like, of the ego structure, or the cork in the bottle. It maintains who we take ourselves to be, maintains our self-images. See if I've got some more examples. Yeah, so if your ego ideal is that you should be healthier, should be healthy, it reinforces the part of us that feels deficient in achieving that goal, which may actually be a true desire of ours. We may actually want, we know we're not in shape and we want to get a little healthy, but the push from the ego ideal, the holding up, this is how you should be, constantly reinforces that part of us that feels deficient in achieving that goal. And by keeping on in that way towards us, it doesn't actually allow us to address the self-image that I don't feel capable of doing it, I need help. It doesn't allow us to get that far. We're just constantly pushed on for not being good enough. doesn't allow us to get close to the fact that we feel like we lack willpower and we feel hopeless about the fact that we can't get in shape. We just feel bad about ourselves. So as we start to undo this structure, we start to see how the ego ideals are holding these self-images in place, we get to start to look at the self-images. These identifications, these ways we take ourselves to be, that really is the beginning of disidentifying from the clothes we've put on. But as long as the inner critic is firmly in place, we can't really get to the self-images that are underlying it, that are held in place by it. So that's really one of the reasons we're bringing this up, is we've got to take the lid off. We've got to take the glue out so that we can start to look at these identifications, these ways we take ourselves to be, that obscure our natural state. So most of our relationship with our superego is fairly hidden. It's not something we share with other people. You ever notice that? You don't talk about your own self-criticism much with others unless you're in a situation like this. You don't really want anybody to know about it. Don't want others to see it. You don't want others to see that you're judging them either. But what's the interesting thing is that one of the things that makes us feel most unsafe in any situation, any group situation, is that we feel we might be judged. You ever notice that? We talk about this situation's not safe. What are we really talking about? One of the things we're talking about is the fear that if we are ourselves, we're going to get judged. The power of the inner critic is phenomenal. And it can be extremely vicious. So if it's projected out, we can feel like this place is not safe. We're going to get viciously attacked. And that, of course, does happen occasionally, but on the most of the time, actually, it doesn't. Most of the time, we're just frightened it will. And we're frightened of our own, the power of our own critic. And a lot of the time, we don't actually get the words to an attack. We just feel the effect of it. I know some of you have come across that. When we can get the words, there's actually a feeling like maybe there's something I can do about it. But a lot of the attacks, the only thing we feel is some kind of effect. We suddenly feel shitty or beaten down or collapsed or withdrawing. And we don't know exactly we don't know what happened. We were doing fine. Usually when something like that happens, it's a good idea to check out, did I do something outside of my usual box? Maybe I did something and someone inside here has got a problem with that. A little teacher of mine said, whenever you feel like crap, check out what your inner critic's up to. And I think there's some truth in that, because as Rob said several times, a lot of it goes on in our unconscious. We just get to feel the effect of it. But we stay engaged with the inner critic. And there's reasons for that. We've got to look at the ways we stay engaged with it and the reasons why we stay engaged with it. The ways we stay engaged are all the effects the feeling down, the feeling wrong, the feeling right. Arguing with our inner critic, rebelling against our inner critic, all of that's engaging it. Repeatedly doing things that you know are going to give you a superego attack keeps it going. We say, why would you want to do that? But I can reckon that pretty much everyone in this room does something quite often that they know they're going to get attacked for, but they do it anyway. It's that chocolate, that ice cream, that cigarette, that beer, that... Well, we've all got something. Or most of us, I shouldn't say all. We can justify ourselves to our inner critic. We can bargain with it. Well, if I can have it today, if I can eat it all today, I won't have any tomorrow. You just be quiet while I enjoy this. You know, we do. We got a whole relationship going on here. You know, another way we stay engaged with it is obviously blaming others, putting others down, attacking others, judging others. It's just staying engaged with this structure, and for the most part, we don't know how to do anything else. It feels like it's us. Actually, it feels like it's us. We talk about it. We're talking about this thing called the inner critic. Mostly it feels like it's us. But the reason we're making it explicit and we start calling it an it is to start to get a little bit of a gap in there between us and this structure. Get a little bit of space. A little bit of disengagement. So the reasons we stay engaged, those are interesting. Why would we do that? And Emma talked some about it this morning. I'll touch on it briefly because it might be relevant later. But we stay engaged because it's the child's perspective. When we are engaged with the inner critic, we are taking the child's perspective every time. And the child's perspective is, I need to be accepted, I need to be loved, so I need to be the way you want me to be. I need to stay in my familiar surroundings so I feel safe. Because without this relationship, I might feel adrift, lost. I might start acting out, might have no moral compass. All my worst fears might, my whole animal soul might just come out of nowhere and I'll do everything I'm not supposed to do. It sounds like a nice idea, doesn't it? But that's a real concern. We're terrified. We are terrified of our animal part. And we're terrified of it because of what happened when it showed up as a child. It got put down in no uncertain terms. We can be terrified of our sexuality, terrified of the part of us that wants to just eat and fuck and be wild and dance naked on the mountaintops, whatever it might be. When we're children, how we feel and what we do are the same thing. We don't have any sort of discernment. We forgot that as adults we can feel something but not actually have to do anything about it. We believe that the only thing that can stop us doing anything about it is the inner critic. That's the child's perspective. And if we don't have an inner critic, we're going to feel alone. No mum, no dad, just us. Big world. So it really is a very pervasive structure. And we have a lot of reasons to keep it around. But as we start to create a little distance, we can start to spend more time in the adult perspective and see and learn, oh, actually, I don't need that anymore. And Emma said all that this morning. So if we let go of the inner critic and the ego ideal, what happens to our self-images? What happens if the ego ideal of you should be smarter than you are? What happens to your self-image to do with your intelligence if there's no you should be smarter than you are? Where does that leave you? Just leaves you as you are. Leaves you simply as you are, with your intelligence just as it is. Maybe the things you want to learn more about, just because you want to learn more about them, not because you should, so you'll be smarter. All of a sudden, all the comparisons are gone. You just are as you are. It's like saying a long ladder is better than a short ladder. That's what the superego does. It's, you know? No, a short ladder is a short ladder, a long ladder is a long ladder. Without the superego, you are just as you are. Just a ladder. No, just a person. So this is why we want to look at this, why we want to open it up. But first, we have to understand something about energy and juice. The child the most important thing for a child is survival. Still very animal at that age, an organism. Our instincts are right here. We know what is dangerous and what is not on an instinctual level. And for humans, love is pretty much as important as food and shelter. They've definitely done things to find out the truth of that. So the child channels all its libidinal energy into staying safe, staying alive, making sure it's accepted and loved. So all this energy gets channeled into this part of us that monitors us to make sure we're doing everything we think mom and dad want us to do. Everything society wants us to do. And it's very intense. And I don't know, you've probably seen little boys and girls around 6, 7 years old. When they know something's right and they're supposed to do something, they get very tight and it's just like, this is the way. And you can see them telling their brothers and sisters, this is how it has to be. And there's a panic in them. And it's really intense. That's all the instinctual energy going into making sure I survive. There's a huge amount of power in it. And it can be so vicious towards it. We can get so vicious towards ourselves, even when we're that young. You know, if we'd make a mistake. You see youngsters, sometimes they make a mistake. Oh, God, they're so hard on themselves. The parents are going, hey, honey, don't be so hard on yourself. Because for them, it's no longer really anything to do with the outside. It's like, I know that if I do something wrong, I'm threatened. So we got a lot of energy gets invested in this structure for a very, you know, for a good reason. It's survival. The trouble is that this energy gets encapsulated in this structure. Our life force, our instinctual life force, gets encapsulated in the inner critic. And when it's in the inner critic, it's not fully available to us. It's available to the part of us that judges us and pushes us and evaluates us and compares us and tells us that we're this and others that they're that. And we feel like we don't have any say in it. We feel drained. We can feel weak, powerless. When you're under a superego tank, you probably all know it, you feel under, for one, an attack. And often you just have to ride it out because you can't do anything about it except hope that it'll pass. But we do have a few ways that we can actually help ourselves disengage. And in a way, all of these ways somewhere are about taking back that invested energy, that little one of us invested in our survival, invested in this structure, taking it back and feeling it in ourselves. When we start to feel how, and hopefully this is, if you didn't know it already, it's beginning, you're beginning to know it now, how devastating this structure can be. One of the things that can happen is you start to get mad. You start to get indignant that this is the way you are treated. And the moment you start to feel it as, this is the way I'm treated by this structure, already there's a little disidentification. Just a twiddle, little bit of disidentification, because it's no longer I'm terrible and I'm a piece of shit and I'm being told I'm a piece of shit. So there's something over here that's not completely identified. And I'm not saying we're there, you know, can be there all the time, depends on the intensity of the attack. But just beginning to see the structure as some part of us rather than us being it is a beginning of a disconnection and a disidentification, disengaging. So we can start to really get indignant that we're being treated this way. And we can do a few things to interrupt the attack, to take it down a notch, to take some of the energy back. And these techniques, they are techniques, I won't say anything else, really, they are. But they're informed by different qualities, different aspects of essence. And when we study those aspects, we'll go into it in greater detail. But because we brought this subject up, we wanted to give you a little bit of something to go home with, as it were. So when you're feeling that you're under attack, you're feeling like you're being dogged by some kind of criticism. And you're just feeling something's up, someone's on me, something's on me, but you don't have any words. I just feel really down, I feel like I fucked up, I feel like, God, I wish I'd never said that. We've got some words and we've got somebody that we can see is telling us we fucked up. But sometimes we just feel down. We just feel like we're shit. It's really hard to defend against that. We've got to find, how come I feel like shit right now? What's going on? There are words somewhere to be found about why we're feeling this way. And it might take a little bit of work to find out what those words are. But we've already got to start. We know that it's a possible critic. we can check it out. We can see if that's the case. It's not, when we're down, it's not always the inner critic. But the inner critic stuff has a particular flavor. It hurts. It hurts, and it makes us feel small. Two really key things. Makes us feel small. But even if we don't have words, and all we've got is this sense that something's on our case, we can do a few different things. One of them is we can harness our life energy. And we can do that in a lot of different ways. You know, with inner critic. Who's got all the juice when you're feeling like this? You can tell by the body language. There's not a lot of juice here. It's all here. So we can do all kinds of different things to gather some energy. We did the Ram chant for a reason tonight. You notice how you felt after that? Charged up, juiced. The critic wouldn't have stood a chance with all that energy in you. So we can shake and just feel the energy. We can do, I always do this, it's a favorite thing of mine, it's a little embarrassing, but I have this thing I do when my critic's on me. Hiya! At the critic. It's amazing, it works. It gives me just enough space to begin an inquiry. You know, it just creates enough space. So what it's really doing is it's bringing the energy in here rather than having it out there. It's a bit silly, but who cares? It works. And everyone finds their own. That was mine. I don't even know where it came from. Probably Bruce Lee or something. So we can shake, but we're interrupting an energy flow. And the energy flow is from something big to something small. And we're turning that on its head when we shake or we jump or we go for a run or we get some energy going in us. It's not curing it. It's not making a big understanding. It's interrupting an energy flow to give a little bit of space for us. Another possibility, you know, and everyone's got different complicated superegos. You know, some of us have head-banging superegos where we just, God, that was so stupid, that was stupid. Did you ever see Four Weddings and a Funeral? Yeah. Fuck, fuck, fuck. I think he was after the girl, he said something stupid or he got up late. It was brilliant. I'm classic superego. He is definitely a headbanger, you know. I don't know why I thought of that. But it was a great depiction of it. But one of the things, another thing that can interrupt that energy flow is humor. You know? If you... superego is telling you you're really, really dumb. Tell me something new. I'm the dumbest person here. You know, it's Aikido. You're taking that energy away from it and creating that little interruption, little gap. If you get into an argument, you're going to lose. That's engaging the superego. You don't win because arguing is an engagement. We're talking about an interruption, a disengagement that gives us enough space. It doesn't have to be, it's gone forever. It gives us enough space to gain some understanding and some inquiry about things that are underlying the superego, like self-images and things like that. You can also just be really honest when you get attacked. Ouch. Ouch. What's the super going to do with that? So there are ways we can try and you can come up with your own to interrupt this energy flow. Because when we do get that gap that I'm talking about, a way we know we got that gap, and we've had it in the room already, one of the things that we notice is space. Space arises. Suddenly we feel like there's room inside of us. And what that is basically the lack of structure. When there's not a structure dominating our consciousness, we have space. So we know we disengage from the superego because there's a feeling of space, feeling of freedom, feeling that we can expand to whatever size we're likely to expand in that particular moment. And when the space arises, what it allows is the different qualities of our being to inform us more. It allows those in. There's no room. When the superego's there, there's no room. There's no space. So you know you're disengaged when the sense is that there's just a lot of space in your consciousness. A lot of room for you to be, simply to be. So we're gonna do exercise. And you won't be able to write this down, so just listen. It's this long. I think maybe there's even more of it. Now I gotta sort through my papers, make sure I got it all. It's hours long. Here it is. Yes, two pages. Okay, so what are we doing for time? 8:30, 9:30. So we're going to get into groups of three, and you're going to get four chairs. And we're going to have a dialogue with our inner critic. One of the chairs, you're going to take turns to do, there'll be three of you, so two witnesses and one person working. One chair is for the critic, and the other one is for you. Now, if you're in that place where they feel like the same thing, just designate one for the critic and one for you. And you'll start in the seat which ever feels it has the most energy for you. It feels like you feel most like I can sit in that seat. No big deal. It doesn't matter which one you choose, but just pick the one that feels like, yeah, I want to sit in that seat. The judge seat is going to be the one of evaluation, criticizing, comparing. It's going to have something to say about how you're supposed to be. It's also going to have a certain kind of energy. And it's the energy that we're really interested in. Sorry, Lucas, I'll get this together. I'm working on it. It's the energy that we're really interested in working with. A lot of the dialogue is important, but it's the energy that we're going to work with. So whenever you sit in a chair, you're going to feel the energy that arises for you in that chair. Yeah, I'm just going to hold it. That's fine. It's okay. I can do it like this. So Rob's ears, wrong shape. Ha, 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 ha. So each time you take a seat, you want to feel into it and comment on how you feel in that particular seat. You might feel strong, big, small, weak, neutral, feel nothing, feel scared. Doesn't matter. Just whatever you feel. And how what you feel is going to change. It might well change. That's okay. Feel the energy. It's an exploration. Whichever seat you're in, it's going to be you in that seat. So however you find yourself in the moment is fine. You might want to ask your critics some questions. Let it know how you feel towards it, how it makes you feel. Why am I asked why it treats you this way? Yes, you've probably got some questions for it, and it's probably got some answers for you. So it's a dialogue, and you just move from seat to seat. You know, and you're not going to say, critic, I don't like you, you might say that, but talk to it as if it's a you. You know it's the critic, so I don't know why you treat me that way. Get in that chair. I treat you that way because you're not grown up enough to be treated any other way. Change chairs. But do you realize what that effect that has on me? So it's a conversation, and you're going to move backwards and forwards in the conversation. And sometimes you might spend a little longer in one chair than the other. And you're going to feel the energy. And you might get confused. You might get up to go in the critic chair and feel like you're not the critic. And you might get up to go into the you chair and feel like you are the critic. That's okay. The confusion's important. Don't let yourself be a little confused. Feel the energy. Feel the energy of where you are. If you get really stuck, really snowed under by the critic, and you're in the you chair, and you just feel beaten to death by the critic, get up, move around. Try some techniques to disengage. In fact, if you have enough of the critic at any time, try something that just disengages. And you'll know if you've been successful because you'll actually experience space. And you'll know if you haven't been successful because you'll still feel like you're entangled. But you may not need to. Just the inquiry itself and the fact that you've got the critic over there and you over here, there's space between you. That might be enough to open up more space. So we're gonna do this, we're gonna do this dialogue, and you know, however you can. The teachers are going to be around. I'll be around. If you really get stuck, you can come and find one of us, and we might be able to help out. And then when the 15 minutes is over, I want you to stand up and look at the two chairs. Just look. And notice what you experience. And then we're going to do 5 minutes of further inquiry and discussion with your partners. Started off by, what's it like to look at these two chairs, having just done that exercise? And in the further inquiry, you can just reflect back on the process, and your partners can ask you questions. And really just see how it goes. So we're exploring the energy flow between big inner critic, little you, and see what happens. Any questions? Yeah. Yeah, you're going to dialogue with your inner critic. Yeah, you can disengage. The disengagement can happen in two ways. One way is explicit, which is the kung fu thing I showed you. The other can happen. I can't really explain why. It's got something to do with energy and confusion. You'll know. But remember, it's got to do with how much energy you're feeling in any particular seat, whether you feel big or small. Just notice what happens. And when you're in the inner critic seat, and if you feel big and strong, whose energy is that? You think there's an inner critic, like the elephant Rob talked about. Do you think there's actually an inner critic that exists? We've just designated a whole bunch of energy to an idea in our mind. So when you're in the critic chair and you're feeling a lot of energy, check out who that belongs to.
Yeah. Now in the theater of critics, there's a positive criticism and negative.
Yeah.
So the critic can be
sure.
And negative.
The critic can sit there and tell you you're fantastic and you're marvelous. Notice how that makes you feel. Yeah. There's extra chairs at the back, so you can get your fourth chair. And you might want to spread out into the balcony and the hallway out there. Is there a room up there? The sauna room. And then we'll be around, so you know if you need any help, you can come find us. Alrighty, we'll see you back here in about an hour. Okay. Put this thing in here a minute.